Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Principal Group Program Manager, SQL Server, Microsoft Corporation, Gert Drapers.
All right, welcome everybody. Thank you very much. So thank you for staying here. It's like if you've been following the Azure track all day, welcome to this session. So behind every application hides a very interesting set of data to make this actually work. And so that's what we're actually going to cover today, is like how we actually integrate that into our Azure environment. Now, while we're going along, you might actually feel obliged to mention something or get something to me. If you have questions, if you have remarks, please use this #@WindowsAzure. At the end of the session, we will actually try to go through your questions if there were any. So feel free, tweet along, and we'll go along. All right. So we'll start off with this familiar frame that was actually used by Scott Guthrie in his session this morning. As I said, it's like behind every interesting application that we're building sits a set of data. And in order to manage that data, we need a set of data services that actually allow us to build these applications. So what we're going to do today, in the next hour or so, we're going to talk about these three pillars. We're going to talk about what big data means in this context of the cloud. We're going to talk about what database storage means in context of the cloud. And we're going to talk about the other forms of storage that we actually need to complement this to actually build more interesting applications. Before we go in there, let's take a moment and actually digest what this big data theme is all about. So why is there all of a sudden this huge amount of interest in big data? Right, if you look at like the Economist of October last year, actually, you will see that it's not only on the minds of the IT people, but even on the minds of government leaders, CIOs, and CEOs inside or around the world of how they can deal with this phenomenon that we call big data. So the starting principle there is that we're facing an explosion of data. The amount of data that is digitally born is huge. And we've come to the insight and the realization, many thanks to actually all the internet search properties that are out there, that taught us a very important lesson. You can derive a lot of value by piecing together very small data nuggets that are hiding behind different things. What does an internet search property really do? Well, they follow your click behavior, what you enter in their search browser, and they actually build up a profile, and they're trying to sell you advertisements. That was a mind-shifting game. Now, in order to get there, they needed to mine through enormous amounts of online data in a very unstructured fashion. And they still started building up this infrastructure that allowed them to do this. They did this using common off-the-shelf hardware, just a collection of boxes. If they needed more compute power, they just added some nodes. Those nodes were cheap. So what happened, actually, they had a high failure rate. Great. So they built an infrastructure that actually dealt with the high failure rate. And that actually started introducing us to cloud principles that allow us to build application hosted as services. So we also see that besides the new data sources, it's like all sorts of sensors. Your cell phone is a data source. I just bought a thermostat, actually, for my house, which has an IP address. And it broadcasts the information to a service, giving me the ability to check in on it, arrange the temperature, see how much energy I'm using, and hopefully I can save some energy too. What it actually broadcasts is a stream of data that in traditional sense we would not qualify as highly structured, probably more like semi-structured. We also face new data types. The where part of where you are today, locational information, is a very important piece that we're tracking along with these devices at most times, because that gives us interesting things to correlate with. So we can tell you actually that you better take a detour, because otherwise you will be in a traffic jam. A couple of years ago, we would not find that really possible. Now, everything that we do today actually is made possible by the fact that the cost of storage is dropping so fast that it's now achievable that we can mine these large quantities of data, which are getting cooler and cooler and cooler, right? It's like they start off by really being really hot inside some transactional system, and then they're cooling down. Now we can hold on to that data. What did we do in the past? Well, in the past, we took this hot data, we run it to an ETL pipeline, and we loaded it in some warehouse. So we could ask questions, but we could only ask the questions that we already knew that we're going to ask, because that's how we modeled the data warehouse. What we learned from the internet sites, however, right, the internet search premises, is that you don't know which questions you're going to be asking or going to be asked. And so if you throw away the data, you might actually lose the opportunity. Therefore, we have much more appetite these days to just hold on to the data and allow us to ask those new questions that will get us to new insights and actually go from there. So what is Microsoft doing with regards to big data? October last year, so October 12, 2011, we announced that it's like we're going to work together with Hortonworks and embrace Hadoop as a distributed compute fabric, allowing us to do MapReduce tasks over large sets of unstructured data, over streams of data. So we're working on two things. We're working on the fact that it's like we're taking Hadoop and making it enterprise ready. So it fits in the same fashion you are used to all the other Microsoft products. It integrates with things like Active Directory, System Center, Visual Studio. Right. That's what we're doing with it. And we're actually doing this in cooperation with Hortonworks and contributing all these changes back actually to the open source community. We're also hosting it as a service, because setting up a cluster is actually not that trivial. And you might want to be able to provision a cluster when you need this, but later about, we'll talk about that, more about that later in the presentation. Now, we also allow you to consume data that is being produced by others to a marketplace, or for you to actually provide data to others and share it, either paid or unpaid, through that same marketplace. So people can use this kind of information for things like data cleansing or social analysis, and provides the capability to derive these insights by using familiar tools, like, for example, Excel, to those business intelligence users to actually get to that insight that is hiding within your data. All right. So let's talk about the data services that we are going to discuss. So we're going to walk through the variety or spectrum of data services that we have hosted inside Azure. So we'll talk about our offering about virtual machines, our PaaS offering, and our storage offerings in Azure. But let's start with SQL Server inside a virtual machine. As you've seen the keynote this morning, hopefully you went there, you saw that we are making available as part of the Windows Azure offering the ability to host a full SQL Server environment inside a VM. Now, the key thing here is that it's a full SQL Server, period. It has the same capabilities. It has the same features. It has the same programming interface. You can use the same tool sets to actually use that. The key difference is it's hosted within our environment. So we're managing the infrastructure on your behalf. This allows you to actually lower the cost for running that particular SQL server. But you maintain the flexibility and control because you determine when you need it, how many you need, how big it is, and when you want it to have it go. Now, the key thing from an application point of view is that it doesn't matter where this VM is running. This VM could be running on-premise in your own Hyper-V environment. It could be running on your database consolidation appliance, your private cloud appliance, or in the public cloud. Now, we've been working on this for a while, and we've seen a couple of interesting patterns arrive. All right, we've seen customers do a couple of things when they are taking this SQL Server installation inside a VM. First of all, they're trying to move applications that they have today, that they're running today, and trying to leverage the TCO dimension and move those 2- and 3-tier applications into the cloud. Sometimes they keep it on one box, sometimes they separate it out, or they use it as a tee-up to start splitting their application apart. They're moving the application side into a PaaS environment while they keep the database inside a VM because it relies on certain capabilities that are not yet available. We've also seen that a lot of companies are leveraging this to increase the agility of their development and test environments. Today, if you want to start a project, you have to spec out your machines, you need to know how big it needs to be, and you need to order it, get it to procurement, and before you know it, you're months later and you can start your development. With VMs that you can provision literally in moments, that barrier goes away. So a lot of companies actually use this as an improvement in their agility and their ability to start projects, test things out, spin environments up, take them away, and drive it actually to their needs. The third dimension is that we see people actually leverage it as an availability measure. They're taking their database and backing it up to the cloud, leveraging the storage that they have in the cloud, the geo-redundancy, or the geo-replication and the redundancy, allowing to make a vault out of the cloud for them. And then last, we see, and this is something just starting, where people are trying to burst into the cloud. They have applications today, they need more capacity, and they want to leverage the capabilities that we have in the cloud. And for those of you who went to my fundamental sessions this morning, one of the things that we are working on, for example, is the ability to take existing VMs and have them participate in failover scenarios between on-premise and the cloud to create a seamless environment and so you can share your information between those. So I want to ask for some help. I'm going to ask Dave to come on stage and help me out. So we have this application. And what we're going to do today is we're going to walk you through the transition of an existing application and move it through the various stages, applying the different sets of technologies to show you actually how you can apply this yourself. So right now we have an ASP.NET app, is that right?
That is correct.
Running SQL Server, MVC, and we're going to move it?
We're going to move it.
All right, well, let's take it on and show it.
All right, let's see what we got here. So good afternoon, everybody. What I'm going to do is we're going to take you through an application that we've written. It's probably an application that most of you are familiar with. It's by one of our famous companies called Contoso, and it's an expense reporting application. So those of us that go to conferences, obviously we have to submit our expenses to get reimbursed, and this is what this application currently does.
So this is going to provide insight in what I eat all week?
This, not detailed down to what you eat, but where you eat.
Oh, okay.
So if you're eating at expensive restaurants, we're keeping an eye on you, Kurt.
I'll keep it to myself then.
Perfect. So if I go here to SQL Server Management Studio, I can see I have a local version of SQL Server running, and I see I have my expenses database right here. If I go back to the application, and I could simply log in here, but as a convenience issue, I can just click on this button up here to log in as my user. And I see my expense reporting application. And let me just go ahead and create a new report. Let's call this TechEd. let's spell it correctly. Let's call it travel. And let's add a new expense line. Let's call this dinner. Description,
keep
dinner.
Keep it cheap, right?
Dinner with Gert. And let's say, I don't know, what was dinner last night? About $400?
Okay.
Right? That was a nice dinner you had last night.
I think
right?
This is for tonight, but okay.
Okay, that's perfect. So I'm going to go ahead and save it as a draft. And so now I have my expense report entered. And so let's actually begin the migration. So in order to do that, let me go over to the management portal, and let me create a new VM that will be, that I'll go ahead and migrate this database to. So to do that, I simply click on New. I click on Virtual Machines, and I'm going to say From Gallery. And now if I zoom in here for a second, I have lots of different options for different virtual machines in this gallery for me to go ahead and choose. Windows Server, I even have Linux. And if we see the top one is Microsoft SQL Server 2012. And if I click on this and just go Next, let me go ahead and call this, Contoso VM. Make sure it's available. Perfect. Type my password.
Your favorite password.
Okay. My favorite password that I'm not telling anybody. And they don't match. Let's try this again. That's better. And I have the ability to choose what size of the VM I want to use. And since Contoso is a humongous company, let me just go ahead and choose a large.
Well, we eat a lot, so.
We do eat a lot. That's very true. So let me enter the DNS name up here. And I'm going to put it in the West US region. And then the last thing I'm going to do is create an availability set. Availability sets, you might know, is as fault domains, so that if one machine in one geographic region can go down, I can go ahead and fail over to another one.
So the reason we create this in the West is because this is still preview, right?
That is correct.
So that's why it's not yet available inside Europe.
So now here we are. It's going ahead and creating my VM. It should take a few minutes, but for demo purposes, I'm going to go ahead and actually use one I've previously created. So if I click here, I can see I have my SQL 2012 VM. And let me go ahead and just connect up to that. And let me open the RDP session. Bless you in the audience. And let's see as I connect. And so what I have here is I have a full-blown version of SQL Server running on a VM. And as we noticed, there's no databases on here. So in order to go ahead and actually do the migration, let me add a connection to my virtual machine to my local version of SQL Server Management Studio. So let me click in here. Let me grab the endpoint. Copy that. Go back to Management Studio and make the connection.
So we automatically punch the hole in the firewall?
So I'll get to that in just 1 second. And let me just go ahead and SQL Server authentication. Let me just SQL user. And let me establish that connection. Perfect. So as Gert pointed out, what we had previously done is we went into the endpoints screen, which is located right there, and we noticed that we've opened up TDS port 1433 to allow us to connect up through the standard management tools into this. We had actually also had to go into the VM and open up the firewall port for 1433 as well. The one thing we did not have to do was open up the remote desktop port. That was opened up for us automatically. So now if I go back to SQL Server Management Studio, I could see I have a connection to both my local on-prem version and my virtual machine running in the cloud. Now, migrating this database is actually pretty simple. I simply right-click, go to Tasks, and go to Export Data to Your Application. I go through a very simple wizard. And what I'm going to be doing here, you recall back in SQL Server 2008 R2, we introduced the notion of a DAC pack.
Mm-hmm.
A DAC pack being a single unit of deployment for a database.
Oh.
With 2012, we've extended that, and we've introduced this new database artifact, something called a backpack. Consider a backpack to be a DAC pack plus all the data. And I have two options here. I could save this backpack locally, or I can actually save it up to Windows Azure. The reason I might want to save it up to Windows Azure is if it's a very large database, mm-hmm. I don't want to have to do that restore over the internet. I want that to actually happen locally.
Okay.
But in our case, it's just a very small database, and I'm simply going to go ahead and save it to... Let's save it to my desktop. And let's call this expenses. And let me go ahead and click save, and click next, and then finish. So now what it's going ahead and doing is it's looking through the schema, looking through all the objects, it's extracting everything out, and it's building me my backpack.
Okay.
And the process has been completed.
So this is a semantic definition, right, of the database. So it does incremental updates, et cetera.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. Perfect. So let me go ahead and click close. And now just as easy it was to go ahead and do the extract, I can simply right-click on the databases and go import data to your application. And I can go ahead and just point it to that same backpack that I just had, expenses.backpack. Let me go ahead and click OK. Next. Now, here's the great thing about it. It knows that I'm going ahead to deploying it to SQL Server 2012, so it's already created the appropriate database name, and it's sending up the appropriate data file and log file. I'm going to go ahead and click Next, and click Finish, and here it's going to go ahead and perform the process of restoring that. Now, since I am restoring this over to a data center in the US, this might take a moment, but as this is going, let's actually go jump over to Visual Studio and take a look at the code for the actual application itself. Here we are in Visual Studio, it's a standard MVC application. And for me, the only thing I really need to do to go ahead and modify this application and to point it from my local SQL Server running here up to the cloud is just simply change my connection string. You know, we've been saying change your connection string for quite a number of years, and it actually just works. So let me go ahead and choose my virtual machine connection string. And then let's go back to see how this is going. Okay, this is still going. So let's give this one more second to have the restore occur.
So the only thing we had to do is like update connection string, point it to the VM, make sure our firewall is okay.
That's
so we
correct.
Can connect. So we tested that using mm-hmm. SSMS
mm-hmm.
and wait till the restore is finished.
Which should be just one more
All right.
second. Almost there.
It's almost there. Well, at least we have connectivity. That's good.
That's very good. We've heard lots of I've heard lots of things all day about internet connection issues. So, luckily, we are good.
So far, the demo gods are with us.
The demo gods are very, very happy with us. So let me go ahead and just click F5 and just run this locally. It's a good best practice because I wouldn't want to go ahead and put the database up there and then have to debug any connection issues.
So our expense report should be there, right?
Because it should be right here. And let's go to my reports. And there it is. We can see the TechEd expense report that I created. So now, just to recap, I've taken that database, I've now moved it up to the cloud. But my application is still running locally. So I think the next step of what we want to do is we want to take that application and move it up to Windows Azure so it's co-located near the data.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to do that, let me go back to the Windows Azure portal, which is right here. Let me go new. Let me go to website. And let me just do a quick create. And let's call this Contoso Expense. Make sure it's okay. Perfect. And we'll put that in the East US region and go ahead and click create. Creation failed. Let's try that one more time. Websites, click create. Let's call this Contoso 2. Let's try this. Create website, create the website. That failed also. Let's try, three times a charm. Website, click create.
I think we claimed victory too early.
Let's call Dave Demo 2. How about that? Create website. It's thinking about it. I might want a little applause if this goes through. There it is. Perfect.
All right, perfect.
Nice. All right, so now the next step for me to go ahead and do this is to go ahead and deploy this application to this website.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the great things is that I can simply just click on this and I can go over here and I can go ahead and download the published profile. Back in the day, we used to have all these config files and enter in these connection settings manually. Now this is all contained right within this published profile. So if I go ahead and download this, and let me go ahead and save this, do a save as, and save it to my desktop. There it is, perfect. Let me go back to Visual Studio, stop my application, right-click, and say publish. So if I can now import this deployment profile, which is located right here, And this has all the settings for the deployments. Mm-hmm. So all I simply need to do now is click Publish. It's going to go ahead and package up the entire application, deploy it to the cloud, and then run it for me. So let's just give this one more second. The cloud is running a little bit slow today.
Oh, that happens, right?
It always happens at conferences, too. You know, ever notice that when we're in the privacy of our own offices, you know, it just...
It always works.
It works beautifully.
Yeah. I think we're there.
We are almost there. Yeah. Let's give it one more second. One more second. It's thinking about it. I think I'm ready to declare victory.
Better wait.
There it
All
is.
All right. Very cool.
So there's the application. And if I log in... Just to keep myself honest, notice we have Dave Demo 2 on the URL. And I can go ahead and to my reports. And I can see my expense report that I have migrated over.
Very good. Thank you.
Perfect.
So what this actually shows is like how we can take an application that is on-premise today using SQL Server, actually provision a new VM inside the cloud, leveraging our existing tool sets, and move it over. And basically leverage our existing skills, and you saw how easy it is now to publish this. So if we can go back to the slides, please. Thank you. So what you've seen is the simplicity and the ease of actually standing up a VM with a full-fledged SQL Server environment. Now, of course, it's like leveraging a VM environment like this. It's like, if you look at that from the point of view, is like pushing it into a platform as a service, it actually delivers the next step with regards to achieving the availability and the cost of ownership of that solution. So our next offering is actually Windows Azure SQL Database, previously known as SQL Azure. I might still slip that in. I'm sorry. That's an old habit. So what it actually is it's a relational database hosted as a service inside the cloud. And the key thing for you there is that it's fully managed. Well, if you're still in the VM environment, you have to manage your database. You have to do your transaction log backups to make sure that they're not exploding, that they're shrunken, et cetera. In this environment, we take care of all these operations for you. We make sure that you have a highly available, scalable environment which has global reach. All our data centers around the world are actually hosting a SQL Azure database. Now, the way that you use this same database is through the same familiar interfaces. It's still a TDS, a Tabular Data Streams connection. You still use ADO.NET or ODBC to connect your applications up to this fabric. You can still use the familiar tools that Dave has been using. So that actually allows you to quickly make the transition and start leveraging the next step, which actually delivers a higher degree of cost of ownership. So now, in order to actually show you how that's done, we're going to take the next step, right? It's like show them how easy it is to actually move it out of the VM now, because we got comfortable with the cloud.
We are.
We feel good.
We feel good.
But now it's like we want to stop managing the database.
We want to move to a managed password.
All right, so let's do it.
So excellent. Can we go back to your demo? Perfect. So the next step here is to go ahead and take this database that we've been moving around from, you know, standard SQL Server 2012 instances and move it up to Windows Azure SQL Database. So in order to do that, I simply need to go ahead and create a new server. So I'm going to click on SQL Databases. I'm going to click on Servers. And I'm going to say create a new SQL Server. And let's put in our login name of Azure Admin.
So this is the cloud equivalent of calling a hardware vendor, get a new machine,
buying
having
software,
storage,
racking
SAN storage, everything?
All that stuff, yes.
Okay.
I can recall back, I was on the SQL Azure team for many years, and I recall doing a keynote in Africa where we did this little competition where I gave a gentleman a CD for for SQL Server 2008. And we put it in, and we had a contest. Who can get the database up and running first? I had mine up and running in, what, 30 seconds? And he hadn't even booted the CD by that time, so.
Well, that's not fair.
Pretty cool stuff. So now that I've gone ahead and put in my database service settings, notice at the bottom I have a checkbox that says allow Windows Azure services to access this server. What that'll do is that'll open up the firewall for this server and allow any other application running on Windows Azure to go ahead and connect to it. But that's just Windows Azure applications. In order for me to go ahead and connect up with my SQL Server management tools, I need to go to Configure, and I need to add a firewall rule. So let me put Internet. Let me put 0.0.0.0.255.
So you just hope that nobody in the audience knows your password.
I trust everybody here today,
okay.
To be honest.
Good. Trusted audience.
So I went ahead and I added that, so I'm just going to click Save. And now that's going ahead and opening up the firewall. So the next step is let me go back to my dashboard and let me copy out my actual database name, my server name, excuse me. Let me go back to SQL Server Management Studio and add a new connection. Let's paste that in. And let's call this Azure Admin with my password. And let me go ahead and click Connect. And perfect. Now, I want to call to everybody's attention what we have here. We have one single tool that all of you in the audience are used to using. We have it connected to an on-premise version of SQL Server 2012. We have it connected to a version of SQL Server 2012 running in the cloud, as well as our Windows Azure database via a single tool. There's nothing new to learn. What else is awesome is, remember that backpack file I had used to go ahead and do the restore? I can go ahead and use that on this as well. So I simply go ahead and say, import data to your application, point it to the same backpack. We go ahead and click Browse, expenses.backpack, go open, and click Next. Let's say I want a business edition database, because it knows that I'm deploying it to the cloud. I have a different set of options here. I don't need to worry about, you know, the data file or the log file, because it's automatically managed for me. And I simply go ahead and click Next. And finish. And doing the same thing I just did before, it's going to go ahead and deploy this database to Windows Azure SQL database. Now the next step, you want to take a guess what I have to do now?
Well, probably something with a connection string.
Something with a connection string. So let me go back to Visual Studio.
That seems to be your solution.
That's the only thing I do is change connection strings. That's
okay.
About my level of skill. So let me go ahead and enter in my Azure connection string. And while this is running, let me go back and actually modify this and enter in my server name, which is right here. Copy that out. Paste that in there. Perfect. Let's go back and see how this is running. This is almost done. So since this is almost done, let me go ahead and publish it one more time. Now
so
the great
this will do a complete refresh, or
this will not do a complete refresh. That was the point I was going to make. You don't have to apologize to me, Gert. Please. The great thing about it is it's only going to go ahead and send up the deltas. So at this point, it's only going to go ahead and send up my web.config config file.
Okay.
I'm going to click Publish. And then let's see how this is doing. This is completed. And then let's give it one more second. I'm running a little bit faster now, which is good. And it's waiting. And here is my application. And let's go back to my reports and just make sure that we see my expense report, and it's there. So now I've gone ahead and completed this and migrated the database to Windows Azure SQL Database.
All right, perfect, thank you.
You're welcome.
So in these two parts, if you go back to slides, please. In these two parts, what we actually shown is like a typical transitional stage of how we can use the stepping stones to actually take an existing application and migrate it into an hosted environment into the cloud. So in two steps, it's like we took our ASP application, moved it into a hosted environment, and we took our database from first running inside a VM and then running inside a platform as a service database. Now, one of the interesting characteristics as running a database as a platform service is all the abilities that we get with that. So in order, as I said already, it's like, the key thing is that you don't have to manage this database.
We make sure that it is highly available, that it is scalable. So the way that is done, actually, is by default, every database inside the platform has both a primary node and at least two replicas to guarantee that we always have a quorum so we can make sure that we never lose your data. We also leverage backups for other disaster recovery scenarios, and all those happen automatically too. So you don't have to pay attention to this. Now, in order for your application to connect, now you have three nodes, right? So where do you connect to? Well, this is one of the roles that the gateway plays. The gateway actually is our point of authentication, right? This is where you are logging in. This is where we check your credentials. So this is how we also can evolve schemes, like, for example, start to work on federated authentication aspects. This TDS session is then routed to your primary to make sure we can load balance between those three nodes. And then it's like while you're making changes, we replicate those changes to the two secondary nodes that you have inside your environment. Now, if there is a failure, we will actually switch over and you will not even notice. If there would be a networking problem, it's like a top of rack switch problem, for example, it's like you would not notice and you don't have to manage that. Those are advantages of actually running your database as a platform service instead of hosting it inside your own VM. Now, once you have your application up there, the next question is, how do I scale this? How can I leverage this? How can I grow my database? So one of the things that we recently added is what we call SQL federations. This is an ability to scale out your application by leveraging multiple databases by partitioning over a federation ID. We've done that by extending some of the SQL syntax, by introducing a use federation statement that allows you to join a partition, which automatically makes sure that the connection is redirected to the right node where the data actually lives. This allows us to actually, once we are inside this pattern, to start leveraging a mechanism to grow our application through configuration changes instead of code changes. So once we adopted the sharding pattern, which is effectively what the federation is doing, it allows us to grow and achieve greater scalability and performance than we actually had before. Now, there are two things that are fundamental to this federation. The first of all, I already said, is like the use federation statement actually makes it transparent for the application to figure out on which nodes inside the federation its data lives. The second part is the ability to split. So if your database is big enough and you want to split it between two sites, we implemented that as an online operation. So you can grow your federation without incurring any operational downtime. Now, maybe it's interesting to take a look, Dave, and it's like actually see how we can leverage this inside our own application.
Perfect.
Because I'm getting hungry and I need to write some more expenses.
I know you are. Perfect. Can we go back to demo, please? Excellent.
There we are.
So here we are. We're back inside SQL Server Management Studio. And the first thing I'm going to want to head and go and do is create a new database. And let's call this Contoso Fed. Contoso for our favorite company, and Fed for a federated database. I'm going to go ahead and click Execute. So boom, we have a brand new database available to us. And the next thing I'm going to want to do is open up a SQL script I have previously written. So let's go Contoso Fed DB. Let me go ahead and change to my new database, which is Contoso Fed. Perfect. Change context. There you go. Let me go ahead and hit F5. And while this is running, let's go ahead and take a look at what we're doing here. So when it comes to federations, we have the notion of something called the root database mm-hmm. and something called the member database.
Okay.
Inside the root database, you want to put things that are common to the whole entire application. Application config settings, things of that nature. So as we could see here with this standard SQL statement, we are still in the root database, and we are still in the root database, and we're creating a table, so that's going to be placed up inside the root database. If we scroll down a little bit more, let's find where we actually do the create federation, which is right here. And we're saying create federation, we're naming it, and we're mm-hmm. saying it's a range federation based upon the user ID. So basically what's going to happen is when I do this create federation, it's going to create a federation member, and that federation member right now will contain every single record. If we go ahead and scroll down a little bit more, we could see a table create where we specify that it's a federated table. And we noticed that by the new T-SQL syntax that we've added, with saying federated on user ID, which is the federation member, is the user profile ID within the table.
So we're associating the column in the table with the federation key.
Exactly. So that way, when our application goes ahead and says use federation, it knows which member or which partition to go ahead and direct the connection to. The final thing I want to call out to you is that we have things called reference tables. So we all have data that we need to go ahead and do joins on, and we want that to be within the member database so that way that join can occur. And that's what we can actually see here. So if I go down, and so that's how we go ahead and create the federation member. So that if we can go scroll down here, we see that it executed successfully.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing I want to do is I want to go ahead and run some queries over this database to see what it looks like. So I'm going to go file, I'm going to go back to open. And let me go ahead and say fed split. Let me open that up. And so the first thing I want to do is let's highlight that and run it. So let's call out a couple things. We're saying use federation root, so we're up in the root database. And the next statement, we're running a couple queries to look at some of the new DMVs that give us some information about our federation. We could see the federation name. We could see some other interesting information about that. The distribution name is the user ID. It's a range distribution. And then the last, we can actually see that we have a single federation member, and its range low and range high basically says that every single record will exist inside this database.
So we have federation of one.
Federation one.
Good. Star Trek.
Aye, aye, Captain. So the next thing I'm going to go ahead and do is run this select from user profile and expense reports, which are actually tables inside my database. Now, this just failed. Why do you think this failed, Greg?
Connection string?
Not the connection string, even though, you know, my famous thing is to change the connection
okay.
string. The reason it failed is that I did not change and I did not tell the system I want to go ahead and use the federation. I'm still pointed at the root database. By simply going ahead, and let me just highlight this and zoom in and out for you so you can see what it looks like, I'm saying use federation, and I want to go ahead and look at user ID 0. So that will point my connection at the appropriate member database where all of my records consist. So now if I go ahead and run that, I could see that I've gone ahead and connected to the member database, and I was able to query it.
So if I want to write a multi-tenant application, this is an ideal way, right? It's like my tenant would be the partition key, and I could make sure that all the tenants are distributed.
Yeah, there's lots of different patterns. You could follow that one. You could also follow one where, you know, it's not a multi-tenant application, and you just need, you know, the scale of many
space.
Databases.
Yep. True by default.
Which is what we're doing here with the user ID. So now, if I go ahead and scroll back up, let me go ahead and find my split. I lost it. Perfect. Now, notice I'm doing an alter federation right here. I'm saying alter federation split at user ID 40. So what this will do is it will take my single member database, it'll split it in two. All records with user ID 40 will end up in one, and all records with user ID above 40 will end up in another. So this is a very operational way for me to go ahead and do this by a simple statement. The other way I can go ahead and do it is I can go out to the Windows Azure SQL Database Management Portal. So let me go out here. Let me go to Contoso Fed. And notice I have my manage URL right down here. And I'm going to go ahead and click on it as it loads up my management portal. Give it one more second. There we are. Let me type in Azure admin with my super password. Let me click login. Just one more second. Connecting. What do you want to do for dinner tonight?
Indonesian would be good.
Nice.
Reservations at 8. I was ahead of you.
You are so good to me. So now I can actually, now that I'm logged into the portal, I can see different information about the database. I can see its correlation, number of users, see its maximum size. And notice on the right-hand side, I also see that I have a federation defined. And if I go ahead and click on that federation, I could see that I have a single member database, which is right there. And just as I was able to do in T-SQL, I could just click on this and initiate the split. And let's say, just as we did in T-SQL, I want to go ahead and split it 40. And this is going to go ahead and kick off the operation.
Oh, even I can do that.
You can even do that.
Click
and split. The great thing about this, though, is it's an online operation. I don't have to, you know, worry about my database going down. I'm ensured I have transactional consistency. And when this is completed, I will have two member databases, and my application will just continue to work.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
All right, let's go back to slides, please. So Samsung, as an electronics manufacturer, you might know them, right? It's like they make great televisions. And one of their television sets, actually the smart TV set, actually has this capability. It has a built-in application that calls home. It comes with a whole ecosystem. Now, in order to actually make sure that they can handle all the requests that they're getting, Samsung decided to build the application that backs this whole system inside Azure and leveraging SQL Azure federations to deal with the anticipated growth. So today they're dealing with 500 requests or 5,000 requests a second. That's based on the 4 million smart TVs that they sold so far. So of course they hope to sell much more, and this actually sets them up for success so they can actually grow into the future. So once we entered a database and a platform as a service play, one new interesting requirement might come up. I might have data that resides on-premise that I want to synchronize with the cloud. I might not always want to have a failover scenario. So with the data sync services, we introduced yet another service that is completely managed, that allows you to take your data sets that you have on-premise inside SQL Server or between two SQL Azure databases, for that matter, and synchronize them between each other. So this is all configuration-driven. Again, it's like to take the operational aspect out of this, and it allows you to actually scale based on your demands. And again, host it as a completely managed service for you. Now, the last service that actually we're offering is the SQL reporting services. Now that we have all our data, it's like we have a lot of applications that actually are using reporting services today in their on-premise fashion. Now, of course, you could go down the route and say, it's like, we're going to spin up a VM, and we're going to host reporting services in there. That's one possibility. But we're also offering it as a managed service. And the advantage here, again, is that it allows you to grow and scale with your demands, offering you a secure environment that allows users to view the reports that you're hosting. But those are the same reports and the same RDL files produced by the same tool chain that you're using today. So you're actually leveraging your investment and your knowledge to build up a more elastic solution that is hosted now in the cloud and frees up resources both hardware-wise and in your IT staff to go do other things. Now, not everything that we deal with is actually in a rectangular shape. Not everything requires a relational model. So let's dive into Azure Table Storage. Azure Table Storage is a fully managed service that allows you to store key value pairs in a hierarchical manner. So
the key value aspect means is like that there is one key identifying the blob of content. So this can be a semi-structured piece of information that you want to persist on disk. Hierarchical because it's like we actually have partitioning keys that we allow you to spread the data around to actually get a better optimized experience. We expose this to you to a REST API. Actually, to be precise, it's an OData hosted REST API. And the advantage here is that this allows a wide variety of devices and applications to leverage this in a very easy way. The other aspect is that the store itself provides geo-replication. So the information is as redundant as you actually saw with the SQL Server hosted or platform database, whereas like we maintain multiple replications or copies, but we even spread them out between data centers. To give you a small example, this is how it would look like to actually manipulate a piece of table storage information. In this example, we're creating a movie instance. And so we're creating this class structure that has a partition key. So we have this grouping that we create called comedies. We use a row key, which is a unique identifier within the partition. And then we have a set of properties that we want to store. And depending on what your requirements are, as I said, this can be rectangular, this can be semi-structured, depending on how you deal with this. You create the objects, and then you save the changes to the context. That's the basic pattern of how you use with an OData proxy. In order to retrieve it, in this case, we show you here a little link query that allows you to retrieve the instance from the table storage by going after the partition key and passing in the row key, which is the only way how you can get the information out. This allows you to deal with different kinds of storage or data that you might have around inside your system. Now, sometimes we also need to deal with totally unstructured data. And this is where Azure Blob Storage comes into play. Azure Blob Storage is a fully managed service that allows you to store completely unstructured data streams. Files that can be up to hundreds of gigabytes in size, and we offer you the ability to store 100 terabytes per storage account. You would find that it's like we'll use the same kind of API, the same OData-based REST API to expose this service to you. And again, it's like you can choose to actually make this DO replicated. So, Dave.
Yep.
I think we have a need for this, right?
We absolutely have a need for this.
Because like all these receipts that I'm scanning in, where do they go?
Your admin, because you're an important guy at Microsoft that deserves an admin, is actually taking those and inter-officing them to be reconciled.
Oh, we can optimize that.
We can absolutely optimize that. Can we go back to the demo machine, please? Perfect. So what we're going to go ahead and do now is extend our Contoso expense reporting application to add support for the attaching of receipts for our meals and expenses and whatnot. And from there, we'll actually store those up in the Blob Store. So the first thing I need to do is I need to go over to storage and I need to create a new storage account for this to actually to house these receipts. I'm going to go ahead new, I'm going to say storage, and I'm going to say quick create. Now let's call this Contoso receipt. Let's just make sure that's available, and it is. And now notice a couple things here. So first I have the ability, as we've seen previously, to point it at a specific region. I also have this checkbox here that says enable geo-replication that Gert was speaking about a moment ago. By having that checked, not only will it create one account for me or one container for me in the West US region, but under the covers, it'll go ahead and automatically create another one at no charge to you. If in the event of a failure, it'll automatically fail over to that region. I'm going to go ahead and click Create Storage Account. And while this is actually being created, let's go back to Visual Studio and start to make the modifications to our application. So the first thing I need to do is I need to install the actual Windows Azure client, the client software to actually be able to go ahead and connect up. But the great thing, though, is instead of having to go and find an SDK, install it, add a reference and whatnot, I can do all that pretty quickly. All I need to go is to the Library Package Manager and go to the Package Manager console, and I simply need to type in a simple command. So let's change this over to Windows Azure, and let's type in install package, dash package, space Windows Azure, dot storage.
So this saves me from having to know which references to
add. Exactly. And if you pay close attention to the references folder as I hit enter, notice it just flashed very quickly. And if I go ahead and open that up, it's actually gone ahead, got all the libraries that I need, and added a reference automatically to the Microsoft.WindowsAzure.storage client. So that way I can begin to actually work with this. So that was step number one. Step number two is I need to go ahead and add just a little bit of code to actually allow me to upload the actual receipt itself. So the first thing I'm going to go ahead and do is go into the expense report detail, which is the detail screen that we see when we go ahead and actually add a expense report. And let me just put in some code snippets. This first one will give me the link that I'll actually be able to click on to do the upload. Let me go to edit, which is where the actual form will live. Scroll down. There we go. Just do attach form. And there's the actual form we could see. And then the other thing we need to do is to add, since it is an MVC application, to add to the actual reports controller. So if I just scroll all the way down, let me just scroll up a little bit more right here. Let me just do attach method. And this is the actual method for actually going ahead, taking that file, and uploading it. And as we could see here, the code is very, very, very similar to the code you had up in your PowerPoint slide.
Well, in PowerPoint, it always compiles. So.
PowerPoint always does compile. That's the beauty of PowerPoint. OK, so the next thing I need to do is I need to, now that I have my new storage account, I need to modify my webconfig file and add a reference to it. So let me go back to my webconfig file, and let me scroll down a little bit. And let me add in that link and storage account info. Let's just make sure it's Contoso receipt. Perfect. Let me go back to the portal and go into Contoso receipt. Everything spelled correctly? Yes, it is. And there's two things I want to do in here. The first thing I want to do is go ahead and get my key and add my key to my web.config file so I can go ahead and connect to it. The other thing I want to do is I want to go ahead and configure monitoring for my application. One of the things I keep on hearing about is that people want to go ahead and have us localize this application. So I'm going to enable monitoring to actually be able to go look at the web file, the web log files, to find out where people are coming from.
Okay.
So I'm just going to say minimal logging for that. And notice it gives me a little warning that says I might have it might cost me something to do this. But for demo purposes, I'm just going to go ahead and click save. And then the final thing I'm going to do is go manage keys. I'm going to copy this out. I'm going to go OK there, go back to Visual Studio. And I'm going to go all the way to the end. And I'm going to paste in my very long and detailed account key. There we go. Control V that. Perfect. So we've pasted that in. So now let me go ahead and just go ahead and do a redeploy. I like to run with scissors, and I'm sure this is going to compile. So publish, give this one more second. Once again, it's not doing the whole entire application. Let's see what happens here. Perfect. Seems to be loading. That's a good sign. Waiting for Dave Demo 2. Let's go. OK, perfect. So now we're back in our application. Let me go back to my reports. And let's go to TechEd. And let me go ahead and edit that. Mm-hmm. And then notice I have a new link here, my little paperclip to allow me to attach something.
Nice UX.
And it's a very nice UX. This is the best I've ever seen. I'm going to go ahead and click Browse. Let me find where my receipts are. There they are. And let's open that up. And let me go ahead and click Submit. Notice it's saving it up to the Blob Store. And now I can simply go ahead and click on that. And now I have detail about what you're eating at dinner. I can actually visualize it as it pulls it from the Blob Store.
I think we have a bigger promo.
$26 versus $400?
Yeah.
Oh. I feel an audit coming on. Mm. So now that I've gone ahead and attached my receipt, I can simply go ahead and save and submit. And I'm going to submit that and to be reimbursed.
All right.
That's it. Look how easy that was.
Perfect. Thank you. All right, slides, please.
All right. So we've seen how we can actually leverage our blob storage to expand the scope of our application and use it to actually make things like an SMB share unnecessary, right? Because like normally what we would have we done is like on-premise, we would have provisioned some SMB share, some net file server where we would put those receipts. We had to manage it. And right now, we can just store it inside our managed service. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is like how we can actually deal with large pieces of unstructured data. When we started this presentation, I talked about big data and our investment in Hadoop. So one of the things that we're doing is we're building up an Hadoop infrastructure on Windows Azure. So it's a managed, again, it's a managed service where you can just walk up to our portal and ask for a number of nodes inside your cluster. Today we're in private preview, and we're actually offering there, besides HDFS, right, the Hadoop distributed file system, we offer the full MapReduce environment, the Hive abstraction that actually allows you to use HQL, the Hive query language, to use a SQL-like language to actually create MapReduce tasks so you don't have to create them inside JavaScript or in Java. We allow you to stream information in and out, but that's not everything that we're doing. We're actually making sure that the experience that you have is as good as we can right now. So we added a JavaScript console so you can actually do simple development inside your portal. But then it's like that's data that we have. So it's like you load the data into Hadoop. Either you can bring it into HDFS yourself or you can pull it out of your Azure storage account. But now you have all this data there that you manipulated with your MapReduce tasks. You extracted the interesting information. But now you need to get it in the hands of a user that can actually do something with it. This is why we're investing in building a Hive ODBC driver, for example, which allows us to expose this data to consumers like Excel or other applications. We're also building further Excel integration to actually allow people to manipulate this data and start to interpret it to derive this greater insight that they want to have. So that said, I think we have some log files to crunch, right?
Because a lot of log files have been hitting the site. You wouldn't believe. I think we got like 10 million hits in the last 5 minutes. Lots of good stuff. Can we go back to demo, please? All right, here we are. So here's the goal. So Contoso wants to go ahead and localize their application. But they want to go ahead and only localize the countries that make most sense. Because localization, it's a big effort, as we
it's
know.
It's not free.
It's not free. It's actually a big effort. So here I am at www.hadoop.azure.com. And let me go ahead and sign in quickly. Here we go. Hadoop on Azure at live.com. And my password. And sign in. And let's take a look at what this looks like. All right, perfect. As we log in, we have a bunch of different Metro-style tiles for us to go ahead and click on. I had previously gone ahead and did some setup here that I want to go ahead and point out to you. So the first thing I did was I went ahead and opened up the ODBC server port. This will allow me to go ahead and use the ODBC driver, and well, I'm not going to give it away what tool I'm going to use a little bit later, but this will allow ODBC clients to go ahead and connect up to this. The other thing I had done, and let's just wait for this to load one more time, perfect, is I went into Manage Cluster, and I clicked on this Setup ASV. ASV stands for Azure Storage Volume. What I did was the blob store where all my log files are being stored, I actually set up a pointer from Hadoop over to that blob store.
So I don't have to duplicate it.
So you don't have to duplicate it. And we also have options of S3 and Windows Azure Data Market here as well. The next thing I want to do is let me actually go ahead and just make sure that my connection between Hadoop and my blob store is actually working. So let me go out to the Interactive Console. And let me just run a quick JavaScript. MLS, ASV, colon, whack, service, logs. And let's make sure that we have some files there. And we do. So these are the actual log files that are living out there in the Windows Azure blob that I've now connected up to Hadoop.
So my Excel user has to do this?
Your Excel user does not have to do this. Watch. Just don't steal my thunder just yet. Just wait a couple more minutes.
Because this is state of the art for me as a console person.
As Pound LS, yeah. That's kind of, that's all new stuff. We've never typed in Pound LS before. You know, that's, wow. Surprised we don't have punch cards up here. So the next thing I'm going to go ahead and do is let me go ahead and create something called an external table. And let me run this, and I'll explain to you what's happening after I run it. Paste and evaluate. And let's give this a second. So now what's happening is these are unstructured log files. Mm-hmm. What this create external table is doing is it's actually applying structure on top of these log files. Unlike, you know, a traditional relational database where you define structure and that structure is enforced at insert time, the structure here is actually enforced at read time.
And okay, we're applying structure later.
We are, correct.
Based on what we need.
Exactly. So the next thing, let me go back and actually let's take a look at what one of these log files actually contain. So let me just paste this back in here and run that. Give this a second to run. And what we should see here is we should see the actual log file from our application.
So this is actually a Hive query?
Exactly. And there we are. We can see a get to our expense reports at ASPX. And we could also see that this is coming from Brazil, which is good information for me. But I don't simply want to go ahead and go through all this and actually, you know, crunch right here. I want to use a tool, something like Excel, right? So let's see what that would actually look like. So before I actually jump into Excel, let me go ahead and create one last table. And let me just copy this out, run this, and tell it and show you what it's actually doing. So we're saying create a new table called Top Countries Tech Ed. And what we're doing is we're doing a select to actually go ahead and select out and do an aggregate total number of counts based upon each country and save it into this new table. So once I go ahead and run that, this is going to go ahead and take some time. While this is running, let's go jump out to Excel and look at what the experience would be like inside of Excel. So let's jump into Excel. Now notice that on my data tab, I have a new option here called Hive Pane. I had previously gone ahead on the same site that I was on, HadoopOnAzure.com, I was able to download both a 32-bit and 64-bit version of this Hive add-in. Mm-hmm. So now, very quickly, I can go click on my Hive Pane, enter in my cluster details, and let's just call this demo, and let's call this Hadoop cluster .cloudapp.net. Perfect. Let me put in my username and password. Username of Hadoop user.
You said dot at the end.
Of what?
.net.
Ah.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. And then it's like every single password is different.
And it's separation of roles and concerns.
Exactly. Good way to look at it. So let's just give this a second as it's establishing a connection from Excel over to my Hadoop cluster. And it's gone ahead and done that. Let me go ahead and put a quick query in here for you and then talk about what it's exactly doing. And let me paste that and execute it. So I chose to just go ahead and enter in my own HiveQL query. It's very similar to SQL, but as an Excel user, I could have just simply went, selected my objects, and then go ahead and my columns, my criteria, and that would have built up this query automatically for me. Because, you know, you don't expect, you know, a standard Excel user to be able to type in, you know, even though it looks very much near SQL, it's not something that you want your typical user to go ahead and do. So what this query is doing is it's selecting the country and the hit count from top countries, which is that table that I had gone ahead and created, and I'm going ahead and ordering it by hit count, and I'm going ahead and just pulling back the first 10, because I don't know if I really want to localize more than 10 of these guys. So this is still running, so let's just give this 1 second. This might take a couple seconds, because in this limited preview, it has to traverse all the way back to the U.S. to actually gather its data.
Well, elephants don't move fast, right?
They don't move fast, but once they start going, they're unstoppable.
Oh. There they are.
And then here we are. And so perfect. So now I could see, based upon my log files, that how many customers are coming from the US, how many are coming from Brazil. And then as an Excel user, I can simply just highlight all this data, go to insert, let's do a pie chart, and let's very quickly, I was able to mine these log files and get an answer to the question that I had of which country should we go ahead and localize first. I was very easily able to get this unstructured data, add some structure to it, aggregate it all within a matter of seconds, and get it on Excel.
All right.
So that's pretty powerful.
Perfect. Brazil's next. Thank
Brazil
you.
Brazil is next.
So what this actually shows is how we can take the Hadoop effort,
Slides.
Actually use it, right, to go over a set of
Slides.
Unstructured data, get the information out, use a query language like HiveQL to actually do MapReduce operations over our unstructured data. In this case, we staged it into a query table, and then we moved from there. So with that actually arriving at the end, it's like what we've shown you today is a collection of data services that create a very powerful environment for you to build your applications on. It allows you to actually leverage a broad set of types and programming models to build those applications and leverage that within inside your infrastructure on your own terms. So with that said, it's like we're going to switch over to the questions, actually, and see if there is anything in there. Now, I don't have my glasses with me, which is why I'm walking up to this monitor real closely. Do we have any questions from Twitter? So the question, so we have a live question, which is even better. So the question is like, is this already available? So the Hadoop part is in private preview today. You can request an invite code. So if you go to hadooponazure.com, you will actually find a link where you can pass in your own invite information. There were two parts to the invite. One is the ability to get an account on the hosted service. And then there is a piece where it's like you can sign up for the TAP program for the Windows Server version of Hadoop. So that's where we are today. So one question that we got is like, does SQL database also come with staging and production nodes like cloud services? So the answer to that right now is like, it doesn't automatically come with this. You have to provision those as separate service or separate databases on your server. So we don't really know what you're actually using your server for. If you bring up a database, that's opaque to us. Within the hosted environment, we actually don't know that. So the answer to that is probably no then. It's like for us, it's yet another database. Doesn't matter if it's staging or production. Then now the next one is like, how do you actually manage backups and granular restores of docs and apps in Azure? That's an interesting question. You want to take that?
Do I want to take that? Okay, so...
So I can think of the other answer.
So you can think of the other answer. So keep in mind that we are the SQL team. You know, we're not on the Windows Azure Blob team. But what I have heard and what I've done previously is that you can actually do random reads and writes within a Blob file. So you do have the ability to go to a certain spot in the file and actually do a write. And that's for managing the granular restores. We also have lots of customers that are just, you know, manually geo-replicating files around from place to place to place. There's also a fair number of third-party tools that make some of this easier for you. I do know that this is some feedback that the Windows Azure Storage team has received, and I know that's something they're thinking hard about to make that just a little bit easier on customers and developers.
All right, perfect. Better answer than I would give because I wouldn't know. Any more? Any live questions? Sir?
Yeah, you mentioned the table storage, block storage. What about caching and queues? Is that something that's going away or still useful in the whole big data?
So the question is about what about caching and queues? It's like we didn't explicitly include that in the data service part. It's definitely not going away. It's part of our service offerings. We just had to focus on a core set of data services.
So that's why it didn't show up here. But it's as relevant as it was before. All right. As there are no more questions, I really want to thank you for your attention. I hope this was useful. Dave, thank you very much for updating my application. And have a great TechEd. Thank you very much.
Thank you.